It's a middling team, isn't it?
Yes, it's about
it's
the middle.
A mid-table team.
Steady. This is when we look back at the end of the season, they've been relegated.
It's a solid mid-table team.
Shocking side, that is. Football's only been back for 3 days and already we've got more talking points than Royston Trent has had clubs. We'll look back on Reading's opening day defeat at St Andrews and what it means for Steve Clarke going into the final weeks of the transfer window. All that plus a look ahead to two more games for Reading this week right here on the Tarlest End podcast. My name's Dan Wimbush, editor of thetarlestend.com. I'd like to say for this 63rd episode or 60th, depending on what you're reading, because last week I said it was episode 59, and actually I looked back and there was a bit of misnaming problem halfway along the line. technically we're on episode 63, but you know, we've given you extra there.
Yeah.
So anyway, that voice you've just heard is Mr. Alan West, known as Westy. Westy, hello.
Hello all.
And Johnny Williams is back.
It's like after the lost tapes, isn't it?
Yeah. We'll release them all as a DVD set one day.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be high demand for them.
There's a lot of stuff on the floor that we shouldn't really put in a podcast.
Well, once we're done and we're safely safe from prosecution and lawyers and whatnot, we'll release the cutouts. But yeah, gents, football's back. Defeat, so not the best thing to talk about, but is it nice to have football back in your lives?
Oh, it's nice, but the crushing disappointment that it brings sometimes is hard to take. Sat there, open for, I was just saying off air, I said, all the shows I say the same thing about Reading all the time. They give you that little bit of hope and then they yank it from underneath you. And it's still happening now. New season, same old story.
I'm perfectly happy. Taking a 3-point lead in the prediction league already. So. Yeah.
Negative Johnny, they're calling him.
Yeah, we'll come on to that later. Johnny. The positive I took from it is, look, we got beat 6-1 at Birmingham last year. We only got beat 2-1 this year. So technically, we're already doing better than we did last season.
It's a good way of looking at it. You're Nigel Atkins, I'm sure. Yeah.
Well, he had a great first weekend of the season, didn't he? Yeah. Was it 4-0 defeat?
Yeah.
The power of positivity.
I bet he remained positive, though, in spite of a 4-0 defeat.
He had a tweet, I think, on Thursday about something like, I need to get to bed by 10 o'clock tonight, and I'd like to have my team settled. It's just like, Oh, Nigel.
He's still making the same old mistakes.
He is indeed. But anyway, we're concerned about Reading Football Club now and Steve Clarke. So let's move on to that defeat at St Andrews.
View from the Tarlhurst End. Recapping this week's Championship action.
Right, so Birmingham City 2, Reading 1. Defeat again at St Andrews for the second successive season. This one, as mentioned, was a lot closer than last time, thankfully, gents. No embarrassing sixes being hit on this ground this week. But again, unfortunately, we come away with no points. 2-1 defeat. Reading went 2-0 down. Goals from David Cotterill and John Torrell just either side of half-time. Nick Blackman pulled a goal back in the second half. And then Reading had a chance to equalise late on when Simon Cox was brought down. Unfortunately, Orlando Saar on his full Reading debut fluffed the penalty. Simon Cox missed the rebound. And Reading come away pointless. So, thoughts? Good, bad, ugly?
I thought it was good. I mean, all the reports say that Reading really dominated the game, created a lot of chances, and certainly see that from the highlights as well. And hitting the bar, what, 3 times, one of them going in, although I personally don't think the referee or linesman could have awarded that in that situation. I think there are certainly positives to take, but as Westy said sort of in the opening of the show, you've got to take those chances. And even when you're presented with a golden chance from 12 yards and then a chance from 6 yards to get something out of the game, you can't take it. Now, you can say the one that was over the line should have been given, we hit the bar twice. But when you're presented with a golden chance like that, you've got to take it. So partly it is, yes, we create a lot of chances, but at the same time, you've got to score them as well. Like, you can't come away feeling sorry for yourself because you've had too many chances to not get anything.
The disappointing thing for me is last season, how many games did we dominate possession-wise? How many games did we say that we was in control of and that we lost? And we started the same season pretty much in the same vein. We started well at Birmingham. We would take the game to them. We played really well, kept the ball nicely. We give away 2 sloppy goals and we can't finish off a great opportunity to get a draw, which they more than deserved. But it can't keep happening. I think it was, 7 wins out of 27 league matches now for Clarke? And the stats
under 1 point a game.
Stats don't look good for him, do they?
No, Johnny, Bucks Rawley wrote the match report up on thetarlestend.com, compared this game to the Fulham game last year that we lost 2-1. You see those similarities?
Yeah, no, I see that a lot as well, because that was very much, although that was slightly different because Fulham game was a sucker punch in the 90th minute and they completely did not deserve to lose that game at all, Reading. Whereas with this, you know, again, going 2-0 down, perhaps in the similar circumstances, not deserving to. But yeah, the positives were certainly there, and I think any Reading fan coming away from that certainly won't feel disheartened or disappointed. They'll see what Steve Clark's brought in, the players he's brought in have generally performed pretty well, we've created enough chances, but there is that sort of nagging doubt that we still need to convert the chances.
Yeah, I mean, the worry for me is if you can't win games you dominate, how are you going to fare when you're not playing so well? You're going to get hammered.
Well, for me, I suppose the positive, before we go on to the team and whatnot, the positive for me is the fact they were creating those chances. You know, if there is a way to lose a game for me, it is losing like that. I'd much rather lose a game 2-1, having created 15-odd shots on goal or whatnot, and then lose 2-1 rather than losing 2-1 where you maybe scored your only shot on target and you've been peppered. So, certainly signs of encouragement, especially with some injuries. In terms of the team, we debated this, guys, over the past couple of weeks. Jonathan Bond won the race for the goalkeeper shirt. He came in ahead of Ali Alhabsi, was on the bench. Paul McShane came into the side, replacing Anton Ferdinand, and also took the armband as well. So, a little bit harsh, I think, on Anton, who, by all accounts, had a great pre-season. But
yeah, that's the problem. If you're going to bring someone in and make him captain, I did say I thought that McShane would be made captain. I think he was looking for a new leader and someone who has not been around the side for any time at all. It was a shame for Ferdinand because he has played well pre-season, but if you're going to make someone captain, you have to play him every week, don't you?
Yeah, no injury reports, guys. Don't worry about that. He's not injured. He was on the bench. Yeah. He was in the squad.
Not yet.
not yet. Other changes. Aaron Tishbowler came in to make his first Reading start in the midfield alongside Oliver Norwood. The one surprising tactical decision was that Danny Williams and Stephen Quinn were employed on the wings. Nick Blackman was just off Orlando Saar up front.
It's testament to Tishbowler that he's put him in central midfield, because I thought with Williams and Quinn, who play central midfield normally, he'd fill the wings with Tishbowler, but he obviously trusts him.
Or someone like a Jake Taylor.
Yeah, or like you normally do, put the youngsters on the wing. But he's put him straight in there and he's put them too wide. So he obviously trusts him. And if that's the case, you might see him a bit more this season.
Yeah, and he obviously fancies him more than Hope Akpan. We'll come on to that a little bit later, because Hope Akpan looks like he might be off. But otherwise, Johnny, happy with the way that team lined up? Was that the strongest side you think Clark had available?
I think it was the strongest side he had available. But you can see with the amount of wingers we're being linked with, Pablo Hurtado, is it? Possibly coming in, and Alav from Espanyol as well.
Alex Fernandez.
Yeah, that clearly Clark feels like he needs more creativity out wide. But I think Stephen Quinn's a creative player. Danny Williams perhaps doesn't quite have that creativity. He's more a sort of hustle-bustle player, but I can see why he put him out wide. And yeah, I think, you know, that's as good a team as we could have put out there. I think that's your best 11 players that you're putting out there on the field, really.
Yeah, that was available. I don't think you can argue with that.
Yeah, well, as mentioned, the first goal from David Cotterill, deflected free kick. Anything? Any complaints about the wall?
No, it's just a fluke, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the wall separates a little bit, but I think every wall does, really. So, yeah, no complaints. Slight doubts on McShane about giving that away. Was a bit sort of handsy with Donaldson.
Reminded me a bit of that goal that I think Sheffield Wednesday scored. Do you remember in that 1-0 defeat last season?
Yeah.
In a game where we also missed a last minute penalty.
Again,
as well.
We dominated that one and lost.
Well, not last minute penalty, we missed a penalty anyway. Then to the second half, John Torrell scores. Now, this is a goal I've got a bit of a problem with. I think Michael Hector has unfortunately carried that slightly dubious finish he had to the Gold Cup, where obviously after a great tournament he had a mare, let's be honest, for Jamaica in the final. And he's had a bit of a mare here, not quite as calamitous in terms of he doesn't lose the ball right in front of goal, but He gets robbed of the ball just on the sort of corner of the penalty area, just outside of it. Guy beats another man, crosses. Hector's obviously out of position, so McShane's been dragged away. Torrell's ghosted in at the back post in front of a beater and nods past Bond. Is this one you're going to pin on Hector, or am I being a little bit harsh on him?
I think you've got to, really, because, okay, he's right to come out and challenge for it, because I think Gunter's out of position in the first place, but then, you know, to step on the ball exactly as he did in the Gold Cup final against Mexico. I think you've got to pin it on him. As you say, McShane's in out of position. It's a well-worked goal. It's a brilliant cross and a great header as well.
But, yeah, it was a good goal.
But yeah, I mean, the problem is with Hector, he, even though he is progressing at a rate of knots, he does tend to have that little mistake in him. And I don't think you should give up on him, because, he, as we know, he's going to become a great centre-back or a great midfielder. But he does still have those slight errors in his game.
I think he carries the fact that he's played in midfield for quite a long time in his career, obviously moving up through the ranks, and he does think that sometimes he's got a little bit more time on the ball than maybe he has. I mean, if you imagine Sonko being in that position, he just booed it into the stand, you could regroup, you know what I mean?
Or Dubs.
Sometimes it's not pretty, but it works now and again,
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, moving on. Reading do get back into it. Now, this is a positive sign for me because the amount of times last season at Reading, how many times they come back from a goal down, yet alone two goals down, and this, they get within a single kick of pulling back. I think, and I stand to be corrected, Tyler Sten podcast listeners, that the last time Reading came back from two goals down to get a point, even a point, was in the Premier League against Chelsea.
Yeah, against Chelsea at home.
And that is what we're talking 2.5 years ago.
It's a while back now, yeah. Again, they should have got back on level terms. I mean, if it had a crossbar, there's one that went over the line that should have counted. But it's, again, it should have, would have, could have. And they had the opportunity and they fluff it.
Well, the goal comes from Nick Blackman. It is a great little header from Chris Gunn to cross. You could say Thomas Cusack, there was an initial shot that he fumbles. But credit to Gunter and Blackman for reacting. And it's a good header from Blackman. And I'll hold my hands up. We've got a tweet in from Tom Welland saying, what more does Blackman need to do to get some praise and excitement from the fans?
I'll tell you what.
My hands are up.
I'll tell you what, he's first on the team sheet now at the moment. About a goal season.
I can't argue.
In pre-season. He was right, Johnny.
I should have brought some humble pie, shouldn't I?
Should have brought some. Yeah. Could have chummed that down, mate. It'd have been nice.
But no, and the other thing on this goal as well is someone gambling to get into the box. There were so many times last year when someone got to the byline, put a cross in, and it would just go out on the other side for a throw-in because no one's in the box. But Blackman is gambling. It's a brilliant header as well, right where the keeper and the defender on the line can't get it. And, yeah, you know, hopefully he can kick on now because I think he does have attributes like height, like pace, and, you know, clearly he's got a good head on him as well.
He's big, strong as well, and I think the confidence of scoring pre-season goals and some good goals pre-season as well has made him come to the team. I think he can start scoring goals, and there's no reason why he shouldn't.
Really. No, but the key is just like how Robson Kanu. I mean, we've sat here over the past 2-3 seasons and we've picked out individual Hal Robson Kanu, even Nick Blackman performances where he's done this. The key thing now is he's got to keep this run going.
Yeah, keep doing it.
As mentioned, Reading gifted a great chance. It's a clumsy penalty to give away in the final minute. Simon Cox lightly sort of skipping into the box and just a tangle of feet, goes down, and unfortunately, I keep going back to this Sheffield Wednesday game, but like that game, there's then an argument over who's taking the penalty. Yeah. This time, Simon Cox picks up the ball. He's been fouled. He obviously thinks it's my penalty. Nick Blackman, by the way, is off the pitch at this stage, the regular penalty taker. But Orlando Saar then takes the ball, steps up. He hits it hardish, but it's very close to Cusack, who palms it away. Ball then falls great in a fantastic position to Simon Cox, about 5 yards out. And he side-foots it, trying to side-foot it into the corner, but just slots wide of the post. Just bad on both accounts. What's worse for you, gents? Was it the penalty itself, or was it the rebound miss?
It's got to be the rebound miss. I mean,
yeah, it was such an easy chance from the rebound to hit the target. If the keeper would have saved and he's hit the target, you say, well, good save, fair enough. Mm. But he's not even hit the target for 3 yards, and he wonders why Clark keeps him on the bench every week.
And you're talking about karma. He actually stole a march because he was 6 yards inside the box when the penalty was taken. So you can talk about...
He'd already cheated.
Tischbowler's not going over the line. Well, that would have been a little bit of karma in terms of bending or breaking the rules, shall we say. But no, I mean, to be fair, Cusack makes himself big. He can't really... Well, he could probably dink it over him. But when you're presented with a chance like that, and you know, we've hit the bar 3 times, and you think, okay, that's just unlucky. You get a penalty, the easiest way to score a goal, you miss. You're then presented with a charge from 6 yards, you miss. You know, you can come away from that game thinking, well, ultimately, we should have got something.
Yeah, you've got to point the finger.
We deserve to have got something.
Taking the shots.
We'd had a chance to get something as well. It's not like we're desperately unlucky.
I thought Orlando Saar played well on the day, though. It was a shame that he missed the penalty because it's sort of your first memory of him now is, oh, out there. He got a chance.
Yeah, he looked good.
But he's not fit, for one, and he looked like he'd more to mix it in this league, which is a bonus. I mean, he's certainly quicker than Pogreb now. He's not in that lightning by any stretch of the imagination, but he can hold a ball. He looks quite skillful. I said before, he's good in the air. He scores a lot of headed goals. So, again, he looks like a bit of a find, I think.
Yeah, fingers crossed. We just quickly then, before we move on, we've talked about it a couple of times. Tischbowler hits the underside of the bar, goes down. All the video replay suggests that it did cross the line. Couple of points on Tischbowler from our listeners. Notorious says, how big do you think this season will be for Tish if he can stay fit all year? And Chris Hartley also says, do you feel that the referee and his official should be criticised for missing the fact that the ball was a foot over the line? So, Westy, I'll come to you first on the actual ball going over the line or not. Do you think the referee in line out deserve any stick?
No, I think if you look at the replay, the linesman's not going to be level with the goal line for a starters, and it happened so quickly. Even the commentator said it didn't go over the line, and then when you see it slowed down and stopped, oh yeah, it did. But the speed that happens, there's no way the referee can see it from his position because he was stood pretty much where the shot came from, and the linesman's not going to be level with the line, so there's no way they can tell in real time. They'd only be guessing. And we don't want officials to start guessing on decisions, do we?
No.
All right, it's gone against us this time, but I'd have been disappointed if they would have had a shot like that from a mile out and the officials were badly positioned and they'd have given it because it would have been a guess, and I don't think you can give it on that.
Yeah, and Steve Clark's call for video technology, and I think everyone in the Championship would like it as well, but it's a cost thing. It's a cost of installing it at 23 grounds. You know, if you think about teams like, say, Yeovil that come up, you know, are they going to want to pay the thousands of pounds? Maybe the Premier League can help out, chip in some money. They seem to be getting enough of it these days.
I somehow don't think they would.
No, probably not. It will come in. You've got to think it will come in eventually. But for the time being, unless it's in every ground, there's no point doing it.
Every ground up and down the pyramid, I think. If you put it in the Championship, League One will say, well, why can't we have it?
Yeah,
it's an issue of cost and facilities.
Yeah.
What about, just before then we move on to the news bites, what do you think about Tish Bowler and his performance? Obviously, we saw quite a few young central midfielders come in last season. We had the likes of Aaron Cole, Ryan Edwards, Jake Taylor played in the middle, Jordan Abeeds played in the middle a bit. None of them really stuck at it. Obviously, it's very harsh to judge him just on one, but based on this 90 minutes, or however long he did manage, I think he played in 90 minutes, how do you think he did and how high are your hopes for him?
I think he did really well. And I think the fact that he has thrown him in shows you that, you know, he's got a future. Like we were saying about Hector, he plays in midfield or can play in midfield. He could have easily said, all right, well, Hector's, you know, 23, you've got a bit more experience, I'll throw him there. He could have perhaps brought on Hal Robson-Kanu and stuck Williams or Quinn inside as well.
Yeah.
The fact that he's gone with Tish Bowler clearly says, oh, I've got faith in you. Okay, maybe it's a bit like throwing Reece Oxford in, like Slaven Bilic did against Arsenal, and just saying, look, you know, I've given you the chance, now take it. Mm-hmm. I think he's got a big future ahead of him.
Yeah, I said earlier, I think the fact that he put him in central midfield shows that he's confident, he's good enough to play there. And he's a big, strong lad, and I'm sure he'll be fine. He just needs some games under his belt, and I'm sure he'll get better and better.
Yeah, well, a few Tarleston listeners have tweeted in. Thanks very much for doing so. At the Tarleston, using TT Podcast as your hashtag, or get them to us. Calvin said, disappointing to lose a game. Reading should have won, and still not a convert to goal line technology, by the way. But the signs look positive. Ewan Cunningham says, showed more attacking promise in that game than at least half the home games last year. Andrew says, disappointing but encouraging. Positive approach, lots of chances, should have won. We will get better. And Loyal Royal says, a good performance. Clean sheets will be key though. Roll on Leeds.
Yeah, I think we spoke about clean sheets before. If you're not keeping clean sheets, it makes it difficult to win games. That's simple as that, really.
One final note then. African Violet. Did it do it for you, gents?
We converted it. We've converted, didn't we?
Yeah, I was slightly aghast at the initial reveal when it looked a fancy shade of pink. But having seen the actual photos, it's quite neat. I'd have perhaps preferred a more regal purple, a darker purple. But no, it's
maybe a deep purple.
It's not awful.
Yeah, I think you need to speak to representatives of Thai Airways and get them to change their website.
Yeah,
if they change their colour, then just maybe Reading's kit will change.
You're saying there's some sort of correlation between the two?
I don't know. I think maybe they've just admired it. Looked to the website and admired it and thought, that'll look good on a football kit.
Maybe, but it's certainly growing on us.
Yeah, I've got to admit, it's not quite as terrible as I thought. But I don't think it's going to make my top five Reading kits when I look back. So anyway, let us know your thoughts. And with that, we'll move on to News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlehurst End podcast.
News Bites time then. First of all, a potential loan move. Alex Fernandez, as mentioned, could be joining on loan from Espanyol with a view to a buy. We covered this with Charles on the podcast Extra late last week. It looked like the deal was all but done, with the Espanyol president coming out and saying the documents being exchanged, he'll join Reading. But Steve Clark, when questioned about this after the game on Saturday, says, I don't know where they've got that from. They're certainly jumping the gun because we haven't signed anyone. Do you reckon this is just bravado and...
It's been dragged out a bit, hasn't it, from when they said he was doing a medical? You'd thought it would have been all wrapped up by now.
Yeah, Charles seemed pretty convinced that it might be named before the weekend. That he might already be here.
Well, at least today.
He was saying some issues with Real Madrid about buyback clauses and all this sort of stuff.
Oh, okay.
Because Real Madrid sold him on to Espanyol, technically they could buy him back. So I think they've got to just double check that Real Madrid don't want to buy Alex Fernandez back and work out the clauses and whatnot.
They have bought back a couple of players like this year, Real Madrid. The Casilla, their new keeper, replacing Casillas.
Yeah, well, there you go. So it's probably just so they can save a few more shirts.
Yeah, save on lettering.
Got them made up,
haven't we? Yeah.
But that one remains to be done. As I said, you can hear a lot more about that if you go back and listen to Friday's podcast. I just won't spend too long, but it sounds like a bit more of a creative midfielder that we talked about again last week that Reading kind of really do need.
Yeah, young and hungry as well. 22. Yeah. Good age. Yeah.
Although, seeing as Clark played 4-4-2, I mean, I'm sure he might, you know, try and change his formation, but he doesn't sound like the sort of player you'd stick in a 4-4-2. So perhaps we'll see sort of more of a 4-5-1 or a 4-3-3, as is in vogue these days.
Indeed.
To build the team around him.
Well, quite. Well, one person who looks like he might be on his way out of the Medeski, and I wonder if this one is tied up with a Fernandez move, is Hope Akpan. Rumours and reports was that he was in the stands at Ewood Park this weekend.
Where he spent all season.
Yeah. So that one looks like it could be done. Blackburn are currently under a transfer embargo, so there's a lot of complex rules about who they can and can't sign and under what conditions. But speculation is this could be a loan move, or it could even be that Reading cancel Akpan's contract so that he's technically a free agent and Blackburn can pick him up. So one way or the other, I mean, his contract at Medeski ends at the end of the season anyway, so if it's a season-long loan, he's done here anyway. But
and he's been disappointing, to be fair.
I was going to say, are you sad to see him go?
No, not really. I didn't think I was going to miss him.
I'm sad to see him go, but because I thought he could have been good. And the review that Steve Coppell gave him as well when he came here was certainly glowing. He said, you know, this guy could be very, very good indeed. So, you know, it's a shame that he hasn't kicked on. Maybe he had a lot of potential and just needs to go somewhere else to realise
it. Yeah, he's just not progressed as we thought he might.
Yeah, we had that. He burst onto the scene, I think, creating 3 goals in his first 2 Premier League games.
He did, actually.
That brilliant flush shot to Adam Lafondre.
Yeah, yeah, Newcastle.
Disguised pass.
I'm a little bit sad that he's gone because I thought, especially with a decent midfielder alongside him, I think he played really well when Danny Williams towards in the sort of end of 2013-14 when we were playoff chasing. I thought he played quite well. The thing I gave him in my end of season report card, I think I gave him a C. I think he was just very steady. But
he's steady.
If the likes of Tish Bowler are in vogue, obviously they've signed Quinn. They might get Fernandez in, and then there's a chance. You know, as well, obviously, you've still got players like Aaron Cole knocking around.
That's what I'm saying. You wouldn't want him being there and stopping their progression.
Yeah.
Know? So you might as well get rid of him.
Yeah. I don't think he's a bad player, but he's expendable ultimately.
Yeah, he's not a great player, though, is he?
So we wish Hope very well, which is just a shame because it's only 3 weeks ago I was touting him as potentially the best creative midfielder in England.
The next Ford Makalele.
Perhaps.
He still could be.
Perhaps Gary Bowyer has listened to this very show and has gone, hey, up.
I tell you what, players have been signed on far less. So if that's true,
George Ware's cousin, Southampton.
It might well be the truth.
So, do you reckon there's any in the Venky's link? Because Venky's still own Blackburn, don't they? And they're a Thai company, so perhaps.
They're not a Thai company, I thought they were Indian based.
Oh,
Venky's?
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's cut that out of the podcast.
No, let's leave that
no,
in.
No, we're leaving that in. Yeah,
that could be the.
That's geography gold.
Yeah.
So, yeah, well, yeah, hopefully he goes there, does well. I said I wish him both. He seemed a nice bloke. I think he had one grumblings a couple of years ago about not being in the team, but apart from that.
And he's playing next to another man who had grumblings about not being in the team, Danny Guthrie.
Danny Guthrie, yeah. It's an all Reading reunion.
Yeah,
look
great.
Forward to that match.
Yeah, lovely.
Indeed. Well, best of luck, Hope. We'll see how that one pans out. We'll hopefully get an update from Charles later in the week if the deal hasn't gone through. In the meantime, it's time to move on to a pub chat that we teed up last week.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Well, we say this podcast is by the fans, for the fans, and once again, this week's pub chat proves that. We've had a question last week asking, do you think this is the weakest Reading side of the modern era? So we thought, why not discuss it? We just had to wait for Johnny to get back so we could have a tie-breaking vote. So gents, the team that lined up at Birmingham and the squad in general, do you think it's the worst Reading side we've had? At least since we won promotion at the end of the 2001-2 season. Obviously, if you go back to Div 4 sides of the mid-70s, I'm sure you could find plenty worse.
Looking at the squads that you've put in front of me, I think what I was saying to Johnny off air was, when you look at these teams, you judge them now rather than then. So players like, for example, Shane Long being on the bench. As a player that progressed at Reading and went on to be a really good player at Reading, you're judging me on that. You're not judging me on the Shane Long that sat on this sheet in 09 or 10. So when you look at it, it's a bit unfair to the new team because Bond, Tish Bowler might go on to be great players, you know what I mean? Might do 10 years at Reading and be brilliant or move up to play for England, who knows, right? But you're judging on to that day. But when we're looking back, we're judging it on retrospectively, looking at their whole careers. Okay. So it's a little bit harsh, I think, to judge a team that we hardly know against teams that we knew done well.
But I suppose you've got to base it on the expectations, what you know about these players at the moment. And your hopes for them. Johnny, as a starting point, I've picked out a couple of teams that I think could be roughly comparable to this one. The first and most prominent one for me is a team that started last season. Now, that team was Federici Cummings, Pierce Morrison, Hector Abita, Edwards, Jake Taylor, Pavel Perebniak, Nick Blackman, and on the bench you had McCarthy, Guthrie, Akpan, Tanner, Cool, Stacey, and Cox. Obviously, that squad didn't include the likes of Jem Karachan, Danny Williams, Gareth McCleary, who were all out injured. Would you take, in a vacuum, that team or this team?
Well, I think the question is...
I said to Johnny.
I think the question is, is that starting 11 better than the one we started this week? Has it progressed, basically? Has the starting 11 this week been more progressive than that team there?
Well, I don't know, it's certainly changed, because out of the 11 players that started that day, only five of them are still at the club, and only three of them started again on Saturday. I think the team that we have at the moment is better than that team.
Yeah, I do, personally.
I think Sean Cummings, not really that good. Ryan Edwards, again, not particularly of this level. Jake Taylor, we know what sort of level he is. Whereas I think, with the exception of Tish Bowler, you've got that entire team is proven at the very least at championship level.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So from last year, it's a better start in 11.
Yeah.
I think, personally.
Right, so it's immediately at least the second from bottom side. The other team I picked out was the one that started under Brendan Rodgers at the start of the 2009-10 season. The team that lined up for that first game, I believe it was against Forest?
I don't remember.
Or was it against Newcastle? I can't remember which game came first. I do apologise. Whatever the case was, the team was Federici, Bertrand, Pierce, Cisse, Rossignol, Scott Davies, Jem Karachan, Jay Tabb, Hal Robson-Kanu, Kebe, and Church, and on the bench you had Hamer, Armstrong, Gunnarsson, Harper, Henry, Sigurdsson, and Long. God,
it looks like a great bench.
Wish you had to. I'd take Sigurdsson and Long on the bench at the moment.
It looks like a great bench, but because you judge him on now, not so much then.
And again, you know, you've got Califf Cisse at centre back, which wasn't his position. Scott Davies, who, you know, I don't know where he is now, but Simon Church, I think, just come up to the Championship, hasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
So.
And you'd have one game coming into that.
Yeah, you know, it's again, that's not a side that is particularly proven at Championship level. And Karachan would have been a lot younger then.
He'd had a handful of games the season before.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, I think that's another pretty average side. Like you say, Bertrand's gone on to do brilliant things. But at the time, I wouldn't say that, you know, he was a very good player, but I wouldn't say he's nearly the player he is now.
No. What do you reckon, Westy? Would you rather have that team or the team that started yesterday?
Can I have a bit of both?
It's not a dream team.
No, I don't know, really. I think I probably would just about have that team that you just called out. Just about. Yeah, based
the 2009-10
team. Based on the fact that, you know, most of them were successful for Reading.
Yeah, well, I mean, look at it. If you look at the players on that team when he came into it, Federici was fairly established by that point. Ryan Bertrand had played a season for Norwich and done pretty well. Obviously, he was on loan from Chelsea, so there was something to him. Alex Pearce, again, had shown what he could do. Khalifa Cisse was a million-pound player. He had played in the Premier League. Same with Liam Rossignol. Again, another million-pound player. Scott Davies would come off the back of that free kick against Chelsea. Remember that one in the pre-season? Jem Karachan, obviously, had played a bit the season before in the Koppel. Jay Tabb, we knew, obviously a proven performer. Hal Robson-Kanu, an unknown. Jimmy Kebe is Jimmy Kebe.
Actually, I'm going to retract that.
You're going to retract it?
Yeah, because I was reading the wrong team.
All right, there we go.
I reckon that team is worse than the team they put out on Saturday.
Okay, so there's at least two sides then that we're saying are worse.
Because Church was nothing up front. I mean, you put Church up front on his own, you may as well not bother to start.
He scored 10 goals that season.
Davies, what happened to him? He dropped off the face of the earth, didn't he?
Semi-pro now.
Tab was always a steady player that put in a shift for you, but never pulled up too many trees.
Yeah.
Cisse at the back, he had a few good games, but then he had a few bad ones, didn't he?
The common theme with all of these teams for me is, when you look at it, is that even by the end of the transfer windows in that year that we're talking about, there were loads of changes.
Changed, yeah.
So like even the team from last season, you know, has names like Morrison in it, no longer at the club, and then they added players like Norwood into it, and obviously the players coming back from injury. That 2009-10 season, before long they'd added people like Brian Howard and Raziak. JB McEnough immediately bolsters the side. So, and then you don't know what you're going to get from a Sigurdsson. I mean, Tish Bowler could well go on to, you know, I joked about Hope Akpan being the greatest, turning into the most magical holding midfielder. But in all seriousness, the way Tish Bowler's coming through the ranks, there's nothing to stop him becoming a potentially Premier League midfielder.
Yeah. No, there isn't.
So, like you said, it's hard to judge
it. Yeah, because you're judging it on the fact that you've seen him once.
Exactly.
And these guys, you see them play 100, 200 times, some of them.
The only thing is, looking through these teams, and I said we've got lineups going back pretty much 2003-04, is that there's so much quality we've had through the years. But I don't have as much... There's not as much excitement in this team as looking back at some of those teams gone by.
No, he said it's steady. Looks like a steady workman-like side, doesn't it, at the moment? But I think if you look at 2013, 2014, with McCarthy, Bridge, Pearce, Morrison, Gunter, Karajan, Guthrie, Drinter, McCleary, Ross and Cardin, and Lafondra, on paper, it looks like a really good side.
Yeah.
And even the bench was good. Feds, Kelly, Gorks, McEnough, Williams, Abita, Paul Grebniak. That looks like a really, really good side. But it wasn't that great, was it? So
that team got ruined by that Karajan. Do you remember that game against Leeds? I think Karajan, Drenter, and I swear there was somebody else as well. Maybe Williams.
All got injured.
And they were on a great... I think we'd made our best ever start to a championship season. And then, yeah, they got an injury. So
Bridge dropped out of it pretty quick as well. Yeah. You know, see, on paper, it looks brilliant. But on paper, teams don't mean nothing, does it? It's how you perform as a team.
Yeah.
I remember Coppell's side. I mean, he got them together and it was all freebies and people from Brentford or they just about to sign for Bradford. You know what I mean? They looked like a shocking side. At the start of the season, when you see Doyle and Long turning up from nowhere, you thought, what has he bought these idiots for?
Yeah.
But it doesn't always work that way, you know?
And you only need a few subtle changes. I'll just end on this. If you look at the team that started the 2003-04 season, Marcus Hanneman, Shorey, Steve Brown, Adrian Williams, Graham Murty, Steve Sidwell, James Harper, Scott Murray, Andy Hughes, Sean Goethe and Nicky Forster. Again, within the space of a season or two, a lot of changes can happen, but as long as you've got the core elements, and they had that midfield pair in there, Sidwell and Harper, they had the fullbacks, Shorey and Murty, good goalkeeper.
Mm-hmm. But again, I think that is the weakest side of all the ones we come out here.
I reckon.
Because you know, Shorey would have been 2021 at that time.
Yep.
Murty,
he'd had a couple of seasons.
Yeah, Murty had only just sort of been converted to a right back. Yeah, Brown and Williams, who were coming towards the end of their careers. Murray wasn't really up to much. Hughes, well, we all know about Andy Hughes. And Goethe and Forster, again, I think two lower sort of championship, mid-championship players. So I think, again, you can say about Sidwell and Harper what they turned into, but at that stage, they certainly weren't the players that they ended up, if you know what I mean. So it's like we were saying earlier about judging it in the context of that year. I don't think that team, if you'd slotted in, say, the players from 05 or 06 that were different, I don't think that team would have done a hell of a lot better.
I don't know. I'd probably still take that team over the one we put out. I still think Goethe had something left in the tank when he came, and he did score about 15 goals that season. Nicky Forster, just great. Scott Murray came in with a blaze of glory, and it was only really when Pardew left, he just fell off a cliff, because he scored a fair few goals in the first few weeks, and just completely lost all his confidence.
So now, if you look at the team we put out this week, I mean, it's full of international footballers.
True. I don't think an international cap means as much now, though, to be completely honest.
Well, it depends who they're for, I suppose.
Yeah. But
we didn't have too many back in 2004.
No, you had Adie Williams, Hanneman. I don't know if Murty had played for Scotland by then.
I don't think so.
No, Goethe, Bermudan hero. Yeah. He was.
That's what I'm saying. There was hardly any in that.
No. Solarco. Johnny Salad on the bench.
Yeah, again, but he was past his England days by then, wasn't he? Let's face it.
Yeah, I don't think he was knocking on the door.
No, he wasn't.
Although, given the left wing problem, he probably wasn't actually too far away.
So it's hard to judge, but I would say that squad, or that team we put out this week, I'd put up against most. It's not that bad. People are down on it, but we don't know nothing about it. Judge it at the end of the season, then we'll have a discussion about it.
So basically, going off your gut feeling then, you would say, Johnny, there's at least two or three sides you think
absolutely.
It works?
Like I say, the only player that you don't know is comfortable in the championship is Tish Boller in that side. Whereas I think when you go back through the other sides, there are at least a few players who weren't really cut out for that level.
Yep.
Yep, fair enough. Okay.
There's five players started Saturday that we don't know an awful lot about, let's face it, in Reading shirts anyway. And that's five players you've got to judge at the end of the season.
Yeah.
If Saar bangs in 20 goals, you'll put him up against any of them strikers on this list. Yeah.
If Tshibola turns into a great holding midfielder, Saar is a 15-20 goal a striker season, and then you add the likes of Fosu and McCleary and Pog back into the mix, plus Fernandez or Hurtado or whoever Clark's nice, suddenly a team turns great overnight. I mean, that 106-point side, you'd never have said that's 106-point winning side.
No,
they'd pretty much, with the same team, bottled their way out of the playoffs the season before. So.
And the team that Roberts came into, they didn't look like it was even a mid-table side until he showed up. So
no.
Well, Anyway, that just about wraps it up, I think, gents.
Did we come up with a solution now? I don't know. We don't like
I think we've all agreed that it is by far not the weakest team.
Yep.
It's a middling team, isn't it?
Yes, it's about the middle.
It's a mid-table team.
Steady.
Indeed. Well, anyway, let us know your thoughts. You can tweet us into @thetarlestend or send us an email to thetarlestend@gmail.com. And on that note, we'll move on to the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
@thetarlhurstend
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
Right, so you heard the contact details there, and a big thank you to those of you who have tweeted in and used the Facebook page and the email account to get in touch this week. We very much appreciate all of you who listen, subscribe, or get in touch, or retweet, or anything. All the interaction is very greatly appreciated, and we've read out a few of the tweets already, gents, but kept a few back for the mailbag, starting with Alex Everson, who writes the Bookie Watch up on the old website, #GambleAware. He says, should Clark be playing 4-4-2 when we have such a dearth of striking options currently?
Well, I don't think you should limit yourself to one formation. You know, clearly he decided that it was the best strategy on Saturday.
Technically, it should have worked.
Yeah. So. And I think, you know, when you've got a striker like Saar and, you know, will Saar and Pog work together? And like I was saying earlier, if we get Fernandez in, I don't think he's the sort of person you could carry in a 4-4-2 if he's, you know, that sort of creative midfielder. So I think, you know, it's very much going to be horses for courses. I think you've got enough of a squad there now that you can plug in players when you think, okay, well, maybe we need a bit more in the middle, or maybe we need a, you know, a pacey winger like Fosu or McCleary.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame that them two obviously both injured, because they haven't got any width at the moment, so no. It will be a different style anyway.
And that is that was a point that was picked up on. If you go and read the further reading column, see what we've done there, Jones?
Further reading.
Oh, exactly, nice. Further reading, good further work. Reading. That has been written by Bucks Raw this week. He picks up and looks at the stats and all of Reading's chances being created through the middle. Very few, if you look at the heat maps, very come few wide, chances coming in from wide.
So, that's rare for Reading, because most of their opportunities come wide.
Well, as you say, we try and create chances wide, but there's no one ever in the box.
The amount of hopeless crosses.
Yeah, exactly.
Again, the statistics did great work last season. They picked up on the fact that the more crosses Reading have, the worse they tended to be, because it was just, at the end of the day, aimless punting in, as Johnny says. How many times were there actually people in the box?
Yeah, or was the cross any good?
Yeah. Mm. So, just on the note of strikers as well, Blue and White Jester says, do you chaps feel a new striker or two is needed / likely to come in, seeing the area where we lacked at Brom?
You need to let someone leave, I think, before you bring someone else in. Because now, in terms of strikers, you've got Pog, you've got Saar, potentially you've got Cox there as well.
Samuel.
We've got Blackman. We've got more attacking options this year than we had last.
Yeah, Robson Kanu thinks he's a striker as well.
He thinks he's a footballer.
Novakovic.
Yeah, so, I think, yes, we would feel a lot more comfortable if we had another striker. But at the same time, you've got a lot of options in that squad, so you'd need to offload someone before you bring anyone else in, I think.
Okay, it's the opportunity's there for someone to take, isn't it? I mean, I think there's four strikers now at the club, and for one of them to stand up and say, actually, I'm going to be number one, I'm going to put the ball in the net, the opportunity's there for all of them. I think all of them are capable as well. I mean, we haven't seen a lot of Samuel, but he scored goals last year, and by all accounts, he played really well for Coventry.
I think if Blackman's given a shot up front, I'm hoping that he can deliver.
And he's
delivered
scoring.
In pre-season. He's scored a brilliant goal.
He's got every opportunity.
Yeah. Saar is not fit, and I thought he looked very good on Saturday, considering he wasn't fit. Give him another three or four games, you might have a top striker there.
Mentioned Simon Cox there. Ollie Allen says, do you think Simon Cox will leave before the end of the transfer window?
I don't think he will, but I don't think that they'll be too worried.
I think he'll be in the doghouse after Saturday.
Yeah. I can't
see
a future.
As if he wasn't before.
I can't see if I don't know where he fits in to a Steve Clarke side.
No.
I haven't seen any system they've played
that he's looked good in.
That he looks good in. And I think he'll be on decent wages. He's got at least another year left on his contract. I think they'll try and cash in.
It's a shame, actually. I thought he started well.
Agreed.
I think he started well.
He was our top scorer last season.
Yeah, I thought he started well for Reading, and I remember one goal he scored at home, an absolutely fantastic goal. And I thought, hey, Cox is going to kick on here and score a lot of goals. But then, all of a sudden, just before Christmas, he sort of died a death.
Hasn't scored a goal in 2015.
No, and then we didn't see him anymore. And if he's going to miss chances from 3 yards, he's not going to get the opportunity to play, is he?
Mm.
No, I think he will be the expendable one to allow Clark to bring someone in. Moving on as well, Gary Woodward, in fact, we'll save that for just at the end. One more final tweet. It's funny, as we've mentioned, that 2009-10 under Brendan Rodgers in pub chat. Matt Williams says, following Brian Howard's retirement, what's your fondest memory of Brendan Rodgers' time at the club? Obviously, former Reading midfielder Brian Howard hanging up the boots this week.
He was never the most mobile anyway, was he? Let's face it.
Before a favourite Rodgers moment, we've got a favourite Brian Howard moment?
I Kunda.
He scored up at Liverpool, didn't he?
Or West Brom.
West Brom. When we won 3-2.
Yeah, yeah.
Last minute goal.
The FA Cup.
He did, yeah, that's right. Probably that's the only memory I've got.
I thought Brian Howard...
You have to remind me of that.
I thought Brian Howard had a really good... Who was he playing alongside at the end of that season, that first McDermott season? Was it Tab?
Probably.
It may have been.
Yeah. I think it was Howard.
One of our shortest central midfielders.
Yeah, it was in the same system that Sigurdsson was in, which obviously helps. But yeah. I thought he was part of a really good midfield. And then I remember he was dropped for the first game of the following season and never got back in the team.
He was technically very good. He had a wand of a left foot.
Mm.
Yeah, he was good on the ball. Again, he just wasn't the most mobile. Yeah,
but he was a Rodgers signing, wasn't he?
Central midfielders, was he?
Yeah.
As for the favourite Rodgers moment, I sort of blanked out that year and a bit from my memory, to be honest.
Two ones for me. Winning 3-1 at Barnsley, which is his very first win, and I thought we actually played really great that day. And the other one was when we beat Blackpool in the pouring rain, and that was his first home win. And it had ended like a six-month spell of Reading not winning at home. Yeah. He was on the pitch, drenched.
I've blotted out my Brendan Rodgers memory.
I mean, I said a year and a bit. He was here for about 3 months, so that tells you, well.
Yes, sacked in the December, appointed in the June.
I think the only thing I remember about Brendan Rodgers is the fact he used to be sat in the rendezvous quite a lot when he was an apprentice footballer.
Did he not marry someone's daughter connected with
the
club?
Yeah, he used to run the pub.
Yeah,
he's still married to her, I think.
No, I think they've split up now. They're involved in a...
shows what I know.
They're involved in a messy divorce, by the sounds of the tabloids.
I think the problem was when he got a picture of himself rather than her in his lounge. He seemed talking Liverpool.
It was an ex-Reading player, his daughter.
Oh, there you go. So no favourite Brendan Rodgers memory from you, Johnny?
No.
I'm sorry, Matt. Sorry we can't answer the question. I've offered a couple. So there we go. We do our best. That said, one final question in the mailbag. That is related to the Colchester game, which we play in the League Cup tomorrow as we record this. So we'll answer that and look forward to that game as well as the Leeds one in any other business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Any other business.
You wait weeks for a decent game of football, gents, then suddenly Reading are playing three in the space of 8 days.
Yeah, but are they decent games of football? We'll be the judge at the end of the week.
You don't tell me you haven't been dreaming of Reading's trip to Colchester. Mm.
Yeah, actually, I do look forward to a Leeds home game. That's always eventful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a shame Jeremy Carachan's. Well, not for him, obviously. But yeah.
Don't get him over for the golden gamble. It'll trip over.
Yeah.
Something like that. We start this week tomorrow night, as we record this, with a game against Colchester in the first round of the League Cup. Chance to get a good win. We don't seem to do too badly in the League Cup. We usually seem to scramble through the first couple of rounds.
Yeah, a good opportunity to give a few a game, I think. I think it will mix it up a bit tomorrow.
Well, this is what Gary Woodward's asked. He said, would you like Andrew Taylor to come in at left-back tomorrow? Yep. Jordan Beaton needs to perform better to hold his place. And we didn't cover the Andrew Taylor signing in Newsbite, so apologies to that. He's arrived on loan from Wigan for the season. Bit of left-back cover. We said we thought they needed a bit of experience there, and this is a player, not just experience, but who is genuine competition for Jordan, because he's played in the Premier League, played in the Championship for years, played in a promotion winning side at Cardiff as well.
I think this is a typical Steve Clarke signing. Already we're seeing what a typical Steve Clarke signing is. Someone not of a younger ilk that we're used to with the Reading way, bringing them through young and hungry, rough diamonds, but very much experienced players who we know can do a job, have been there, have done it. You look at players like McShane, players like Quinn, and now Taylor coming in. I think it's a brilliant signing.
Steady Eddie, isn't it?
Yeah, there's no pressure for him to play, but he will put pressure on a beater.
Play well.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the only thing he might do on Tuesday night is he might keep the back four the same, just because McShane's in there, Bond's in there, obviously. The two new guys, they could see the two goals this week. He might want to try and play them.
So I think he might do the opposite. I think he might give Anton Fernand a game, might give Al Habsi a game.
A break.
He's got two good goalkeepers there now.
He should. I'd like to see him do that, don't get me wrong, but he might think, actually, no, let's keep the back four.
I don't know, McShane hasn't played a lot of football in pre-season, has he? No. So I don't know if he's going to then say, play, especially with the Leeds game, that's going to be a big game. I don't know whether he'll go three games in a week. I'd certainly put Taylor in. I think, again, you can't sign someone on loan from
and not play him.
So I think he'll get a game, see what he can do, because... You know, like Gary says, Jordan Beaton does need to perform better to hold his place. You look at the player ratings, again, you go on the website and look at how Will's rated him. Jordan Beaton's getting a 5. Mm. And he's not getting better. Now, I put in the comments section, I just wonder whether Jordan Beaton's heart is in it at left back. Not saying that he's not trying or his heart's not in the football club or anything like that. Don't get me wrong, I'm sure he's training hard. Mm. But if you've not got a real desire to play there long term, are you going to be putting in the extra sessions, picking the brains of defenders and really busting a gut to get better.
And the most injury, he could have taken number 3, but instead he chose to stick at number 11, yeah, which traditionally is a winger's number.
Like he's making some sort of point. Yeah.
Exactly. And don't get me started on Hector taking number 8. That's just ridiculous.
That's not right, no. I think it's a bit of a curse of the left footer, really. I mean, if you're left footed, you tend to get stuck on the left wing, whereas right footers can play all over the pitch. It's a shame sometimes for left footed people because they do end up being wingers because there's just not many of them.
Mm. Well, the stock in Jordan's obviously, you know, supporters' opinions fallen because we did our crystal ball predictions over the summer, you know, sort of suggesting where we think Reading players end up in 5 years. And I expected the majority of people to think Abita would be a Premier League left back, certainly the talk a couple of years ago. More people thought he'd be in the Championship in 5 years than Premier League.
Yeah, I think when he first came on to the scene, he looked the part, didn't he? I thought he looked really well. But I think recently when he's had the opportunity to play on the wing, he's looked light and he's not looked like he's been able to beat players. So I think left-back's the only position he can play. Even in midfield, he was all right, but he still looks a bit light to play in midfield.
Yeah, he's very one-footed as well, yeah. I think. And I think, like we said a couple of weeks ago, you forget he's still only 21.
He's
still
very young.
Oh, yeah,
10 years ahead of him and another year of experience. And hopefully he can lean on Andrew Taylor, use it as competition as well. But, you know, like we said, they didn't really have a mentor for him last year.
No. And they had no one to push him either because he's a left back and we haven't got him.
A Euro traveller wasn't exactly breathing on his neck.
No.
Moving back then to the Colchester game itself. Generally, in favour of switching the team around, you mentioned you might keep the back four, but otherwise, do you expect to see the likes of Samuel getting a game?
Personally, I'd give all of them a game. Ferdinand should come in, give them all a game, you know what I mean? Get 90 minutes under their belt. Samuel, maybe, you know, give them all a run out. I'm sure Sarr will start again like because he's going to need to get fit, so they might give him 45 minutes, an hour. Yeah, play him. I'll swap the team, give an opportunity to the others.
Colchester themselves, they started the season with a 2-2 draw at home to Blackpool. They twice came from behind to get a draw. The only name I picked out from that culture side was Darren Ambrose.
He used to score a lot of goals, didn't he, Ambrose?
Yeah. He scored a belter against, do you remember in the League Cup against Man United?
Yeah, he was a steady player on his day.
So he scored on his debut. Again, whether Colchester will rest it, you can read our view from the town end where we speak to a Colchester fan and he's hinted that they take it fairly seriously, the League Cup. So I can't imagine too many. They haven't actually got the squad, have they, lower down in the leagues to make too many changes either.
And it's a good opportunity for them to get a few rounds under their belt and get a big team down. Make some money out of it, you can see why they would play a serious side.
What do you reckon then? Obviously, this won't count towards our prediction league, but thoughts?
I think we should win.
Yeah, I think there's no reason we shouldn't win.
Prediction then?
2-1.
2-1 Reading?
Yeah.
2-1 Reading.
I'm going to say a 1-0 Reading. Oh, so we're doomed now.
That's a defeat then.
That's a defeat, nailed on. Then moving on to the more serious business of the Championship. Our first home game this season, gents, on a Sunday. Which is rare outside the Premier League anyway. Playing on Sunday because Leeds are on the telly in League Cup action. So
just for change.
Yeah, just because you haven't seen Leeds on the telly recently. They started their season with a 1-1 draw at home to Burnley. Thought they'd won it with an 83rd minute goal and then conceded 3 minutes later. Again, a very, very inconsistent team. They came to Medeski last year and picked up a win. You never really know what you're going to get from Leeds, do you? Not in this era.
No, really were particularly poor that night, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, on about their 10th different coach in 3 games.
Yeah, I think Leeds would be mid-table Championship side like they pretty much have been for the last...
Chris Wood's the danger man. They've signed him from Leicester this summer.
Yeah, he's good. I like Chris Woods. I think he's a good footballer.
Yeah, he kept getting linked with Reading.
Yeah, I think he scored a few against us as well, but he's another big, strong Championship striker, and he holds the ball well. He's a good player. I like him.
What do you do in terms of team-wise? Are you happy to send that same 11 out? Do you maybe see who performs well in midweek? Or obviously, very hard to tell before we play that Colchester game, but...
I think if someone else is fit, say McCleary's... Oh, no, McCleary won't be fit.
Very unlikely to be fit. Unlikely.
I don't know. I mean, I think there's strength in the squad, but I don't know where you would make a change, if you see what I mean.
No, there isn't anywhere. You can't think of anyone to take out, can you?
And you don't want to change the back four, but at the same time, I think that's the only place you could see a change if he decides to pin the blame on someone for Saturday's defeat.
He might give Hector a rest. That's the only thing. He might think, let's take Hector out for a couple of weeks. Mm. He's had a lot of games in the summer. He's made a mistake. I know it wasn't a dreadful mistake, but he's made a mistake. Maybe he thinks Ferdinand played well in pre-season. Let's give him a game.
I can't.
Not saying he will, but no. he might.
I think it'll be very similar. I said you might see, obviously, Fosu, if he's back fit. I think he was half and half for this game, so you'd imagine within a week he'll certainly be on the bench. Robson Kanu as well is going to have to come into contention.
Really?
Well, yeah. He's going to have... Well, look. Let's start with a clean slate here. Nick Blackman... giving him praise today. All is forgiven, Nick. If you keep scoring goals, I will take my hat off to you and say I'm wrong. Same with Hal Robson Canoe.
Next week. Yeah, definitely.
I'm all up for Hal Robson Canoe. How many times have we said it? For the last 10 seasons.
Yeah.
Desperate to get behind the lad. Although it would be typical if he does it in his final year of his contract, then disappears.
If probably did for the last goals. 3 months. The last 3 months of his contract, I'm sure he'd have a few blinders and then disappear somewhere.
Anyway, Hal, the gauntlet has been laid down. So, prediction league-wise then, gents. Johnny Williams off to 100% start. Charles suffering the agony of that last minute penalty. Miss. Had it got in, Charles would have taken all 3 points and me and you would have picked,
We would have picked up a point. Yeah.
Unfortunately, Lando Sarr, obviously in league with Mr. Williams.
Cheers, mate.
Yeah. Johnny, brown envelopes under the table.
Predicted that 2-1 win. So with that, I'll let you go first.
I'll go for another 2-1 win to Reading this time.
Johnny Williams, 2-1. Westy?
2-0 Reading.
2-0 Reading. Oh, God. I'm going to predict 1-1 just to keep the karma.
Yeah,
going.
Good idea.
And we'll pick up Charles's thoughts ahead of the podcast extra, which will probably be recorded on Thursday or Friday. So stay tuned for that. That just about wraps up the show, gents. All done. Any final thoughts before we go? What did you make of first weekend of the Championship? Any surprises, shocks?
No real shocks. I think in the Premier League, I think notoriously big clubs start slowly. I think last year there was a few dodgy results around, and I think the Championship will be like it is every year. Some of them win, some of them lose. If you could be consistent, you'll win it.
There were two things that I wanted to pick out. One was MK Dons winning 4-1 away, I think it was. Great start to them.
Yeah.
Another team carrying momentum through, which I think is very
important. So important at this level.
From League One to Championship. And the other one, QPR losing.
Always good.
Yeah, we would like to see QPR get beat.
Always good. Well, we'll be back. I'm thinking we'll be recording, again, just unleashing this on my co-host now, probably Tuesday night. On Monday, I'm watching a day-nighter down at Hampshire.
Ooh, nice.
Seeing the mighty Lanx take on Hants. So there'll be no podcast Monday. Tuesday, I'm thinking, ahead of the Wednesday game with Sheffield Wednesday. So stay tuned for that. As I said, I'll be recording the podcast extra with Charles later in the week. In the meantime, please do head over to thetarlessend.com. Loads of great content, as we've been plugging throughout the show, especially all the post-Birmingham stuff. The further reading column from Bucks Roar is well worth your reading if you're into your stats analysis and further analysis like that. And yeah, loads of great content. Thank you very much for subscribing, downloading, however you listen to us. Very much appreciated. And please do get in touch. One last time, at the Tarlest End is the Twitter, thetarlestend@gmail.com for your emails, and it's facebook.com/thetarlestend.
Champagne moment?
Yeah, champagne moment, Westy.
I don't think there was too many champagne
Nick Blackman's
moments
header?
To say. I think it's going to have to be Nick Blackman's header. Certainly wasn't the penalty or the miss afterwards.
Sham moment from the box.
If you take your pick, yeah.
Who's the cork?
Poor penalty. Shocking decision from the linesman not to give a goal. Well, it wasn't shocking, he could have seen it, but you know. So there was a few bad ones. There weren't too many corks being popped, let's put it that way.
Indeed.
Not
right.
Yet, anyway.
Well, that just about wraps up for this week. As I said, thank you very much, and we'll speak to you next week. In the meantime, come on, you Rs.
End podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.